This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you from Simon Fraser University's Burnaby campus in British Columbia.
Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm Michael Robert Kaditz. I'm here today with Brandon Brownlee. Cultural evolution is, in a sense, a newer field, a newer discipline than biological evolution, which dates back to Darwin, at least, although it's developed quite a bit since Darwin. Maybe I shouldn't say at least, because I think Darwin was really the originator of many of the concepts of, or if not all the concepts of natural selection. But of course, Darwin didn't know about genes and DNA, didn't have that information. But he was able to nonetheless figure out the patterns of natural selection without knowing necessarily the actual way by which it happened. And the understandings of the methods by which natural selection could happen were filled in later by biologists and other scientists who began to understand how DNA works and genes and how information which determines the characteristics of human beings is encoded in the genes. But anyway, Darwin didn't need to know that in order to figure out what was happening as far as random mutations of genes, variations of genes, right? Mutations, variations, being selected for depending on their advantage, what advantage they might provide towards the fitness of future generations of a species. It's a little more complicated than that. Well, actually, a lot more nuanced than that. But one other nuance is that sometimes non-advantageous genetic characteristics are passed forward just because a characteristic is transmitted forward to future generations doesn't entail that it's advantageous. Oftentimes, it's transmitted or selected for because it's advantageous. But I think we could all agree that there's some disadvantageous or non-advantageous traits that we have, that we've acquired, people have acquired from previous generations. Having given that brief overview of biological natural selection, the question is, what about culture? Culture gets more complicated because culture is not a physical, tangible thing that you can touch, right? It's not a material thing, or is it? And that's really the crux of my research that I've been doing, and some of my hypotheses and some of the claims I make are related to this question of what is culture? Is culture an immaterial thing? And that rings little warning bells in my head of dualism, which I think much of the, at least the scientific world, has rejected. The idea that humans are comprised of both material and immaterial substances, difficult to justify from a scientific point of view. So then what is culture? Is not culture an aggregation of many individual minds? Or doesn't culture arise at least out of aggregation of perhaps two or more? Can you say that two people could make a culture? But multiple human minds. So if human minds are material, if they are, or if human consciousness arises from the material or somehow or is identical to, depending on which theory of mind you might employ to describe the relationship between a human mind and a human body or a human brain, there's some sense, I think, in the modern scientific community that whatever the relationship is exactly, human consciousness, the human mind, is situated in the physical world. Wouldn't it be the case that if the human mind, or a single human mind, is situated in the physical world, and culture is in some way multiple human minds, then wouldn't culture also have to be situated in the physical world? Now, of course, we run into the same trouble trying to define exactly what culture is with respect to human mind. So What is culture? Does culture piggyback on a physical human mind? And is it something more? Then we're getting into dualism again. Like there's this immaterial, mysterious, supernatural substance we call culture that sort of exists in its like own ether or something. It's difficult because it seems to be that culture has a life of its own. It would seem to be unsatisfying or insufficient to reduce culture down to neurons in a bunch of people's heads. Look at all the research and theory that so many, many scientists and disciplines and academics have been doing over the decades and centuries around the dynamics of human culture, how it works. And, you know, and there's just such a huge body of research and theory around culture. To reduce that all down to, oh, it's just neurons, doesn't seem quite right. So Joe Heinrich promotes a model which he calls, is called, he didn't, I don't think, invent this, the dual inheritance model, which I think is confusing. Heinrich makes some claims which, unless I don't understand him correctly, maybe if we were here, he would be able to clarify these things. But in the research that I've done, watching some of his videos and reading some of his papers, I've come to the conclusion that he kind of wants it both ways. Like he wants us to think of culture as a parallel track to biology. And then they exchange information. So you have biological evolution, and then you have cultural evolution, two separate tracks. But they interact with each other. And not only do they interact, but in some ways, the cultural track can be analogized to the biological track. So Heinrich talks about how cultural traits, which are advantageous, they produce the most fitness, right? They produce the most advantage to the human race or to a particular culture, particular subculture, or a particular subset of humans. Those traits will tend to be selected for. Things like cooperation, kinship, trust, being able to trust other people for information so you don't have to figure it out for yourself. That saves a lot of time and energy. For example, infants and children, human beings, as they are growing up and maturing, don't try out every possible substance as possible food and put it in their mouth and chew it and swallow it and see what happens. They look to role models and parents and wherever they might find trusted examples of what kinds of foods are good to eat. Otherwise, it would be pretty disadvantageous for people to be poisoned as they ate non-edible or poisonous substances, trying to find out for themselves. So Heinrich talks about how culture has developed such that we have trusted role models who we might look to for information so we don't have to stumble and fall experimenting for ourselves and, relearn the wheel, so to speak. So that's part of culture and it's advantageous. So Heinrich argues that culture, in a sense, operates just like biological evolution, which is advantageous characteristics such as that of trust and cooperation become part of culture such that every generation of humans don't have to relearn things, which would be expensive and not advantageous. But Heinrich also says that the capacity for culture, which I just described as providing increased fitness, and Heinrich says that this model of culture as being analogous in some ways, at least to biological evolution and interacting with biological evolution, he says that these models, quote, dissolve the intellectually destructive dichotomy between genes and culture. And he says that it places culture under the umbrella of biological evolution. While he also states that culture is a semi-independent inheritance system alongside genetic evolution. So I find these statements somewhat contradictory. I don't know what you think, Brandon, but so what's the case here? What's the argument? Is culture distinct or semi-distinct from biology, or is culture subsumed, under the umbrella of biological evolution? Those seem like two different models to me. Do we have biological evolution under which we have a cultural evolution happening within the overall umbrella, as he calls it, of biological evolution, or are they distinct?
It's confusing because you do have these two ways of describing it. On the one hand, Heinrich wants to say that actually these are commensurate. At the other end, he's saying, well, it's an independent or semi-independent system. It's just confusing because they seem to be two contradictory statements. But at the same time, what is confusing is not so much that, okay, well, you've got one model and then the other, which one is it? It's that actually there is some kind of similarity between the two of them. You can say that culture and biology are commensurable or subsumed within each other, but you're still talking in terms of two systems. So it's still confusing what their relationship is, even if what you're trying to say is actually there's no relationship per se because they're just the same thing. But that's not what talking about semi-independent or independent systems suggests. Or even just saying it's two ways of looking at the same thing. I mean, because if it were two ways of looking at the same thing, why wouldn't we just keep doing biological evolution and not talk about cultural evolution? If it's completely reducible to biological evolution, you don't need to really talk about cultural evolution, but that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to extend the rigorous scientific hand that is biological evolution to include cultural phenomena. It's this problem of someone saying, look, they don't really have a relationship with each other because they're the same thing. But then your model is a dual inheritance system where you have two tracks running parallel. That doesn't sound like they're the same thing, even if they're doing the same thing. You know, when tracks are usually used as an analogy for this because tracks follow each other's motions. You've never seen train tracks, except at like a split or something. You've never seen train tracks that get wider and then grow narrower. They always follow each other. That's one attempt, or that's one way of putting to image two things that are really the same thing. Here, biological evolution and cultural evolution are being imagined as parallel tracks, but we're still left with this question of, okay, you can say that they are the same, that you can reduce them to the same evolutionary processes. You know, fitness accounts for culture as well as biology. I don't know. There is just this question in my mind. And anytime anything like this happens, when you try to, and this is the problem with dualism, right? I mean, with Descartes, mind goes where body goes, except where there's body with no mind. And it's just really confusing. You get a similar question here of, okay, well, if there's evolution, would that mean that everywhere, okay, if evolution and culture, sorry, if biological evolution and cultural evolution are parallel tracks, does that mean that wherever you find biological evolution, you also have cultural evolution? Because I don't think that every biological evolutionary theorist would want to make the claim that wherever there is biological evolution, there's cultural evolution. I mean, you can point at bees. They might have a culture. Certain other kinds of animals might have what we call recognizable cultures, but I don't think every evolutionary theorist would want to collapse the two, because that would mean wherever there is biological evolution happening, there's cultural evolution happening, because they're the same thing, right?
Culture is the same as biology. It seems that those would be ambiguous claims, because we have theories that describe with more specificity the relationship between mind and body and culture and biology. And that's what Heinrich is trying to do here. He's trying to promote a theory which defines the relationship between culture and biology, and to say they're the same or not the same is ambiguous, because by same, do you mean do they have an identity relationship such that one is identical to the other? One in the same, is same being used in that sense? Or same in the sense of analogous? So same is sort of a term which is ambiguous. And that's really what's at issue here, is what is the relationship? And to say, well, culture and biology are the same or they're not the same, sort of begs the question, because, well, what do we mean by the same? So Heinrich, I'm arguing, doesn't clear up the situation so much, because he does recognize, with respect to what you're saying about do other animals have culture, Brandon, Heinrich does make the claim that culture is unique to humans. I don't know that he goes as far as to say that other animals have zero culture, but he does say that humans are unique in that they depend upon culture for their survival. Whereas other animals, Heinrich says, do certain tasks automatically, like gather food, eat food, and that kind of thing. So that's an example. Food is an example of what other animals do automatically, Heinrich claims, whereas humans are cultural. Humans are uniquely cultural in that they learn skills for food gathering, food storage, food processing, what to eat. They learn it from other people, which is a cultural process. So that's his claim. And I have some skepticism around that. I mean, I have some skepticism whether humans are really different in kind like that to other animals. I mean, why would that be? Humans evolved from less complex species of animals, right? They evolved biologically. They weren't created, unless you wanted to argue that. I don't think right now I'm going to consider that humans were created by God, as a different thing, a different kind of thing than other animals. And Heinrich certainly isn't claiming that. But he's claiming that there's something different in kind, not degree, it seems to me, when he says that other animals operate on instinct, but humans have this other thing called culture. I'm not doubting that humans have more complex brains and have self-awareness and consciousness and ability to reason and so on, probably more than any other type of animal, although it's been argued that we underestimate the brain power, the reasoning power, even the capacity for culture in animals like dolphins. But without going into that debate, I think those that believe that other animals likely do have some varying degrees of consciousness and culture and even language would be satisfied that I'm claiming that to the extent humans, if they have more sophisticated abilities and capacities for cultural and rely on culture more than other animals, it's a matter of degree, just because of the more biologically sophisticated brains that humans have.
Yeah, I would think that it is a matter of degree as well, just because of the world that we live in, where it's very difficult actually to find any sharp lines. I mean, that was one of the things that ultimately Darwin's theory of evolution kind of broke down, was this idea of natural kinds, that animal species differ insofar as they depart from a common ancestor, so they also kind of degree, or they have differences in terms of degrees. But it's not as if there is, like in the Aristotelian model, there is the substance of a fox and the substance of a dolphin, and those are metaphysically distinct. That is as sharp a metaphysical distinction is as sharp as a distinction as you can draw in terms of things in the world. So I would not want to say that there are animals that have no culture. I would want to say that if they don't appear to have culture to us, I suppose it's because we can't recognize it at all. But there has to be some kind of, I mean, I can't, it's difficult for me, unless, you know, I mean, doesn't an amoeba learn to kind of cope with its environment? And if it's learning that, if it's teaching itself how to, you know, it encounters something, I guess that's kind of like a very small ignition of culture in a way.
Yeah, you're getting to the real question, which is, well, what is culture?
Mm-hmm.
So Heinrich is, you know, promoting this model of what I think is somewhat ambiguous or perhaps somewhat contradictory claims that culture is, you know, it operates under the umbrella of biology, although it's distinct from biology, and only humans have it. And it's a little bit fuzzy to me, the theory. So, I mean, what I want to do is find a more clear theory about what culture is. But I understand that it's, there's, you know, there'd be problems in trying to reduce culture down to nothing more than biology, but maybe that's where we need to go. And I sort of am going to go there, but another problem with trying to create a semi-distinct entity of culture or view it as semi-distinct, I guess theorists don't create anything. They just create theories. Right. But so I wanted to be more precise in my language, but to create a model, which paints, you know, places culture as a semi-distinct entity, somehow under the umbrella of biological evolution, yet distinct and interactive with it and analogous to it. Another problem comes up, which is that it's really not analogous, because unless you were to claim that cultural traits are genetically encoded, and perhaps some are, but Heinrich is not saying that all cultural characteristics or values or traits are genetically encoded. In fact, he explicitly states that they are transmitted through sense perception. And therein lies another logical problem, I think, with the dual inheritance model, at least as it's promoted by Heinrich. The question is, which is it? Is culture transmitted by sense perception, or is it transmitted like genetic traits, which are not transmitted by sense perception? They're two very different things. So there's a real problem in drawing an analogy between culture to the extent it's transmitted through sense perception and biological genetic adaptations, which are clearly not propagated via sense perception, but rather through genes. So it's another inconsistency and problem that I'm encountering, which again, I take full responsibility for the fact that I may be misunderstanding or not educated enough in dual inheritance theory. There may be some answers to these problems, but anyway, I make that disclaimer that I am not an expert enough to know that there's not reasonable answers to these questions I'm raising, but I think they're reasonable questions to raise. So sense perception, propagation of cultural values imply almost the opposite of genetic mutation, in that genetic mutation is a biological process which is innate to each new generation. So organism would be born with the innate characteristics that were determined by that organism's genes, genetic information. No need to learn anything, right? No. By default, that newborn human, if we're talking about humans, possesses the inherited traits. By the way, I ran across an interesting distinction between the two terms heritable and inheritable.
Really?
I don't know how many people know this, but heritable is a general term, meaning that a trait can be passed from generation to generation. So a heritable trait can be propagated to future generations. It's a type of thing that where there's a method for propagation, and in fact, it can be propagated, a heritable trait. It may not be, but it can be. There's a mechanism for doing so. Inherited trait or an inheritable trait is more specific. It implies that it would be propagated or might be propagated through natural selection biologically. So a newborn human, for example, will be born with inherited traits, which were genetically inherited. But then that kid learns things from his or her parents, goes to school, gets an education, now begins to internalize and acquire values from the surrounding culture. So there may be values that were acquired from the surrounding culture, but they weren't inherited. They were acquired through sense perception. My physical characteristics were likely inherited. My belief systems, well, that's another matter. That now is another way of expressing the cultural evolution problem. And that's one of the unsettled, never-ending debates in social science. Are humans born tabula rasa with a clean slate, or are humans born with preconceived notions, innate notions, innate beliefs, innate tendencies, predispositions perhaps to believe certain things or think in certain ways or have certain values? Is morality innate? Now we're getting into ethics. Is morality an innate, inheritable set of beliefs? Or is it simply relative to the culture and learned from the culture as a heritable but not inheritable system of beliefs? I don't have the answer. I've spent a lot of time arguing about it. A lot of philosophers argue about it. So that's really the question here. Culture is a problematic, difficult, unresolved matter to try and define. And the dual inheritance model that I described is, you know, a valiant attempt. But as I said, I think it has some problems and inconsistencies. And I think the inconsistencies, to the extent that they're real and not just my ignorance here, right, which I admit could be the case, but...
You know, I had a thought. Yeah. I don't know if this clears up all the problems, but this might get us in the right direction. One of the thoughts that I had to do with this idea of culture being passed on through sense perception. But then we wonder, okay, well, genes get passed on too, but they mutate. You know, they pass on at one moment and random mutations happen, and over generations, then you have effective change actually in the species. But I wonder if something like that is kind of happening also in the cultural side in terms of cultural transmission. And the example I thought of was, say someone goes somewhere and they learn to make a soup, right? And they, you know, they get taught how to do this. It gets transmitted to them. But since they come from a particular culture, or they go back to wherever they came from, they take that soup with them, but they make it a little differently. Or they have different, you know, they substitute different ingredients or something for that. So I wonder if that is kind of a way of analogizing the genetic transmission and enabling a kind of variation through natural selection in that way. So just as in genetic transmission, you have random selection, in cultural transmission, you also do kind of have random selection. And it would seem also like, in terms of culture, that random selection is way more amenable. Like, you can try making a soup with all kinds of different ingredients. So you could produce a soup and try mutating it this way, you could produce soup and try mutating it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think